Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From newsounds.org and the studios of WNYC in New York, it's time for another live performance in our Soundcheck podcast series. Streaming live on Facebook and YouTube, I'm John Schaefer. Black Belt Eagle Scout is the work of Catherine Paul, who is a singer, guitarist, drummer. She grew up on a Swinomish reservation in Washington State and describes herself as a radical indigenous queer feminist. That point of view comes through in two albums, the most recent of which is called At the Party with My Brown Friends. Black Belt Eagle Scout is here in our studio to play some songs from that record for us, beginning with this one called At the Party.
Ooh.
That is Black Belt Eagle Scout, live in our studio with a song called At the Party, which you'll find on the most recent album by Black Belt Eagle Scout called At the Party with My Brown Friends. Catherine Paul, KP to one and all, is the vocalist, songwriter. She plays guitar, although at the moment she's seated behind our drum kit. Great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
You'll be switching places with Kamas Logue shortly. He's got the guitar at the moment, but we'll be taking over drum duties. Claire Puckett on guitar as well, and some backing vocals. Nay Wilkins on keyboards and vocals. And KP, this is your second record. The first album sort of came roaring out of the box. I mean, literally, the guitars roared, even when you, as a singer, did not. So there was that interesting kind of play, that tension, you know? This album, the guitars seemed to sing more than they roar. Was that a conscious decision going into the record?
Well, I definitely wanted to have more melodies, I think, with guitar on the album, and especially with keyboard kind of helping bring those guitar lines to life. So I guess, it was more of a conscious effort. The first record was just really like I was just trying to be like so much anger and emotion and just like all this stuff coming out. And so I think that is where those really loud guitar parts came from.
All right. One of my favorite songs off the first record, Loss and Relax, has a wonderful video, which that was shot on Squamish Land, right?
Yeah.
So growing up on the reservation, what was your exposure to traditional music and to things like rock and pop and hip-hop?
Well, Swinomish is right across the channel from the town of Laconer. It's right next to the city of Anacortes, which has an amazing music scene. It's like an hour north of Seattle.
So it's way west.
Yeah, a little bit. And
you're talking to a native New Yorker. It's all way west to me. But yeah.
It's the other coast. And my family, we are like musicians, but in our own cultural way. And so I was always exposed to like traditional Coast Salish songs. And my grandfather had a powwow drum group. And so I grew up going to powwows and I grew up dancing. I grew up just being around that because it was a part of my life. That's right. Essentially what our life is. But, you know, being in the Northwest, there's this really amazing, rich music scene that you can, you know, latch onto if you know where to look. And I found that, and that's how I started getting really into playing loud guitar, you know, starting a band.
So what was your first instrument? I mean, you drum, you play the guitar. Which came first?
I play piano first, actually.
Oh.
Yeah, when I was younger, I loved all of those classical, like, Beethoven stuff. I think there's an intensity to that sort of music that really called to me. And I was, like, really wanted to learn really fast piano, so.
Yeah. Well, now, there's an interesting thing happening, a bit of soul-searching going on in the classical music world because, you know, orchestras, opera houses, they all want a more diverse audience. Mm. And, you know, if you don't see yourself represented up on that stage, it's really hard to feel welcome in an opera house or a concert hall or whatever. Mm. What about, you know, in rock clubs and stuff? I mean, how important is it for young indigenous kids who are just finding their way, 12, 13, 14 years old, to see someone like you or Superman from Montana or A Tribe Called Red from Canada? How important is it to see that happening?
It's extremely important. And, you know, being on this tour, there have been a lot of people that have come up to me and said, thank you, like, your music has helped me through this hard time in my life. You know, there was one person that said, this is the first time that I've ever seen a Native woman, like, in a band on stage. And I always wondered what I would look like, you know, being on stage. And, you know, there's a more complicated answer that has to do with just, like, how high suicide rates are within Native youth and how much, you know, we just need to be more present and have more, have better representation within media. But I think for my personal experience, having those conversations with people at our shows and stuff, like, to me, it's really meaningful to be able to, you know, hear what I'm doing and what I'm trying to, like, do as a musician is helping people.
Yeah. It's interesting to think of someone coming up and saying, you know, I haven't seen a Native American woman on stage before, but maybe they have and didn't even know it, you know, because...
That's true, too, yeah. But
people like Rita Coolidge and Buffy St. Marie. We had Robbie Robertson here not too long ago.
Oh, cool.
And, you know, he was talking about being, like his mom saying to him, be proud you're a Mohawk. She mm-hmm. literally said this to him, be proud you're a Mohawk, but be careful who you tell. Now, this was back in like the 1960s.
Yeah.
By the 90s, Robbie was making records that were sort of all about his Native American, or in his case, Native Canadian First Nations heritage.
I think that like nowadays, like with my generation, there's a lot of trying to reclaim our identity and being proud of it, even if like, you know, not everybody likes it. Because we've seen all of that with the boarding schools. We've seen all of that stuff, all of that just like terrible stuff happen. But we're here now and we're trying to just be as present and as active as we can be.
Yeah.
In terms of just like from where I'm speaking, like with my friends and with like all of these activists that I'm seeing, especially here in Lenape Hoking, like there's an amazing group called the Indigenous Kinship Collective, and they're all around the city. They're all doing these amazing actions and trying to just speak.
Now explain the term Lenape Hoking.
Well, Lenape Hoking is the land of the Lenape people who are indigenous to this area.
Right, so it's where we are right now.
Yeah, we are in Manhattan.
Right. So there is a community of people that you work with. The videos, are they all done by indigenous artists as well?
Yeah, and I think that I'm privileged to know a lot of indigenous artists and to be able to connect with indigenous creators, and so I just like to work with them.
Yeah.
Well,
there's a lovely video for this next song, Run It To You.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of a prom, but it's full of, you know, queer indigenous people.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's a lovely song and a lovely video. The band is here, though, so you want to play it live for us?
We will.
All right. It's Black Belt Eagle Scout. The album is called At the Party with My Brown Friends. This song is on it. Here's a live performance of Run It To You.
Thank you.
Once again, Black Belt Eagle Scout, live here in our studio. The song is called Run It To Ya, and you will find a version of that, the original recording, on the album called At the Party with My Brown Friends. And while I'm telling you what they just played, Kamas and KP are switching places. KP strapping on the guitar while Kamas takes his place behind the drum kit. KP, I wouldn't be doing due diligence if I didn't ask, are you a black belt in any form of martial art? Are you now, or have you ever been, an Eagle Scout?
No.
So no. Where does the name come from?
So before Black Belt Eagle Scout was like a full-time band, I was just kind of playing around with friends. And one of my friends thought of the name. And we had this group, and it was like kind of early Black Belt songs. And then it fizzled out. We were all in separate bands, so we would just, you know, was like, okay, that was fun. And then I decided to just, you know, I wanted to keep playing. And I was like, what's, you know, that name that you had? That was a cool name. I'm not very good at creating names. May I please use it? They said yes. So.
And it started out, I mean, the first record was basically just you, right? Playing everything?
Yeah. I still play everything on the albums.
Okay.
Yeah.
So putting the songs into a live setting involves kind of reshaping them somehow, doesn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. I feel like I try and have the songs on the albums as like live band as they can be. But there are some elements that like don't always show up until we play them live in a show. Like some of the guitar parts that Claire has on this tour, she just sort of kind of added in a textural way, or like with more depth and like something that's more full.
Well, that's fuller. People will do that, won't they? They will just be people and they'll add some of themselves to what you've done, which is kind of the point of a band, I suppose. There is a kind of a sense of community at work and at play in these songs, and that seems kind of intentional as well.
Yeah, I mean, the album is a lot about friendship, and it's about, you know, caring for your friends and finding like this community that's going to support you. And so that's what At the Party with My Brown Friends is about, in which my community in Portland, I had to search for a community where I felt the safest, and that was with brown people, indigenous people, people of color.
You know, it's interesting that when we say people of color, we automatically think African American, Latino, indigenous Americans. You know, it's
indigenous people.
Indigenous people are, if you think about it, you would say, well, yes, of course. But it seems like that's part of the problem, is people are not thinking about it.
I do think that there are still people in the U.S. and Canada, all over, I guess, that just don't really think that there are Native Americans. They think that there's something of the past. But I think that a lot of people are trying to change that and are trying to change those views. You know, I see a lot of musicians that are doing their thing. I see a lot of actors. I see a lot of people in film. I see, you know, so many people nowadays, especially with social media, who can have this presence of saying, like, you know, we're here. You know, even in Congress, there are representatives from Native women from Kansas and New Mexico.
Great. Now, in your community, in the Swinomish community, how closely held are the traditions? Is it something that the people are proud of? Is it something they kind of hide away from outsiders?
No, we're very proud.
Yeah.
We're very proud people. So I grew up on a small reservation. It's about 1,000 people belong to the tribe, but only like 2/3 of the people live on the reservation. So I grew up just, you know, pretty much knowing everybody, and there's a ton of events that I would be a part of, and we're very active within our community and within our region, whether it's, you know, politics within our tribe or just our art and even like family relations. Like, you know, in the Northwest, there's a thing called the canoe journeys. And so every year in July, people will canoe from one village reservation to another and be social with one another and share love. And so, yeah, where I'm from is we are very proud of who we are.
Yeah. I'm not quite sure how to phrase this, but was it any more or less difficult coming out to your family, you know, because of the small traditional community you grew up in?
No. I mean, for me, like, my parents are always super supportive of whatever I want to do. And I think that, you know, my mom, like, when I was a baby, one of my cousins, you know, had, there's like that SIDS thing that happened, and they passed away. And so she was always very protective of me. She was always like, I need my child to survive. And so whenever I just wanted to do something, even if it was like, oh, I want to learn guitar, or oh, here's my identity, there, I was just like, we love you so much. Mm-hmm. You know, we want you to be who you are. Yeah, I mean, of course, those conversations sometimes are a little awkward, but then it's like, I'm lucky enough to have a family that is supportive. But I think that there's still a lot of homophobia within Native culture, especially because of how colonization has said, like, oh, okay, this is how you're supposed to be. Like, mm-hmm. you're supposed to, you know, be in a church. You're supposed to do this. But a lot of Native people have, like, Two-Spirit people within their communities. And so, like I said earlier, there's just a lot of reclaiming happening right now, which is amazing.
And is Two-Spirit a term that, you know, is that a new kind of a neologism, or is that a traditional old term?
I think that it originated, you know, I mean, it's like English words.
Right, so, of course, yeah.
Yeah, I think it originated after colonization, but I don't totally know, because I don't know a lot of Two-Spirit people within my own tribe. I know that in other tribes there are, so I don't want to speak too much mm-hmm. about it, because it's not something that I have personally.
Right.
So,
okay.
But I urge people to look it up, research, and to just get to know more about like queer identities within indigenous populations. I think it's really amazing.
And you think of some of the Pacific Islanders, you know, who have a third gender as part of their tradition, mm-hmm. you know? It's not a new idea, you know? It's something that they've sort of incorporated into their culture over centuries. So, anyway, like I said, lots of interesting stuff if people just want to find out, you know? And that seems to be kind of part of the point, is just get people thinking and listening and asking questions.
Yeah, and listen to the music.
My Heart Dreams is the song you're going to do for us next. Uh-huh. Once again, this is Black Belt Eagle Scout, live in the studio.
Thanks. All right. One, two, three, four.
Once again, Black Belt Eagle Scout, live in our studio with the song My Heart Dreams. KP, how do you decide which songs you're going to play on guitar and which ones you're going to get behind the kit for?
I don't know. I think I just was like, I like playing these fills more on this song, so I kind of want to play. Yeah, because Canvas, he doesn't normally play guitar, and so I was just like, can you please play guitar so I can play these parts I wrote?
Now, it's dangerous to hear that someone grew up on a reservation with powwow music and, you know, drumming and stuff, and then you go to the record and you say, oh yeah, I can hear it. I can definitely hear it. Oh. However, at the end of the record, there is a song called You're Me and I'm You.
Right, yeah.
And I can't help it. I'm hearing at least some kind of echo of that rhythm.
Well, I think for me, you know, because I share that part of myself, I think that it's okay to, like, hear that stuff because it's intentional for me. The way that it's intentional is because it comes from my heart. It comes from my soul. It comes from who I am, my identity. And I put that within how I'm playing, within melodies I create, within some words I say, within, like, certain guitar riffs and stuff. And so when you say dangerous, like, yeah, it is. Sometimes you can't always assume that about people because it's a stereotype. But for me, when I talk about it, it's, you know, my native identity is very much ingrained into these songs. It's not necessarily like traditional songs that, like, my family sings, but that part plays out within the music I create for sure.
Well, it's a very distinctive voice that you've brought to us over the past couple of years.
And thank you.
KP, it's been great having you and the rest of the band here. Thank you so much for joining us.
Osium.
Thank you. This is Soundcheck.
You know you're me, and I'm you. Just like you, my mom. I wear my sad nights if I.
That's all for this Soundcheck podcast. Check us out at newsounds.org for other performances, in-studio videos, gig alerts, weekly music roundups, and more. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. Our associate producer is Karen Havlick. I'm John Schaefer. Thanks for being with us.